move it.
Mandarin.
Yeah!
I'm Phil DeLuca.
Sean Watson.
And Nate Burgess.
And we are Commanderin.
Yes.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We are going to put a spotlight on community issues, but never, ever talk about three banned topics. Religion, politics, and Hearthstone. Remember to check us out on Twitter, at CommanderinMTG, and talk to us there. We also have many other ways that folks can contact us, and we'll talk about that at the end of the show. This week, we have a wonderful show lined up for you. We have a very special guest, the godfather of Commander, the chieftain of the Command Zone, the Commander-in-Chief of the entire format, Sheldon Menery.
Hey guys, how's it going this morning?
It's going well. How about you?
I am amazing. You know, sitting here having a cup of coffee, talking about the best format ever. What am I going to do?
It is the best format ever. And thank you for coming on the show.
Oh, my distinct pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is our lucky number 13 podcast, too. So nothing technical will go wrong. Everything will go perfectly. So, Sheldon, I'm certain that all of our listeners are familiar with you, except for that one person who just subscribed. Would you mind talking a little bit about your history with the format? You have something to do with the format, don't you?
I have something to do with the format. The brief version is that I brought the format with me when I left Alaska. There were five of us playing it back in 2002, and I brought it with me when I moved to Virginia in early 2003. It became very popular in my new local play group. Soon it was all that they wanted to play on Sundays when we met to play multiplayer games. I took it to the Pro Tour with some of the other judges, and there it exploded, and we were playing it regularly in our off times at the Pro Tour by late 2004. It was a regular feature, and here we are. So the format was really kind of bare bones when we had experienced it up in Alaska. And then I put some of my sort of organized play experience eye on it. And that's when we started coming up with a ban list and things like that. And we formalized things around 2006. Fellow Rules Committee member now, Gavin Duggan, suggested that we make it formal. So we did. That's why we have a Rules Committee, and that's why we have an official page and all that kind of cool stuff.
That's excellent. We will be talking a little bit more extensively about the Rules Committee. I know a lot of our listeners have wondered about the Rules Committee, both the secret identities of the Rules Committee members and, of course, how to become one. So we'll talk about that in a few minutes. On behalf of all Commander players, thank you for bringing the format from the Alaskan wilderness. I mean...
Yeah, well, you know, it's been quite a ride these... I don't know, almost 15 years now that we've turned the format from this niche little thing that a bunch of friends were playing to something that has global impact on Magic. So you're very welcome. I'm glad I could facilitate that.
Commander is one of the only formats that has its specific product printed for it, isn't it? That and Modern, I guess. And Modern is a bunch of reprints. So I mean, Commander isn't what got me back into Magic. It was actually Return to Ravnica, but Commander was what kept me in Magic once I was back in after Return to Ravnica. I love it. I was bouncing around the house this morning when my wife was, "Why are you so happy?" I'm like, "I get to talk to Commander Jesus today." And she looked confused at me, and I said, "Don't worry." She hadn't seen me like that since the time I met Stan Lee when I got to talk to Comics Jesus. So, hi, Sheldon. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Well, you know, you put me in pretty mighty company there, Sean. I will say that there aren't any afflictions that you have that I can cure.
I cannot cure a chronic tea addiction, no.
No. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I've visited your lovely country. I have consumed the coffee, and I understand why you drink tea.
It's a fair comment.
Does all their coffee have eggshells in it?
All their coffee is awful. That's all I know.
Yeah.
He's not wrong, but most of our culinary delights are bad, other than our breakfasts and Yorkshire puddings.
Yes, but your pickle products are quite good.
And you also have weird flavors, at least to the American eye, you have weird flavors of crisps. You know, you don't see, like, roast beef-flavored potato chips in America.
No, prawn cocktail, I believe, is a uniquely British thing.
Yeah.
I was unaware that it didn't spread outside the world until I saw a BuzzFeed thing or something on odd British food. I was like, what? Prawn cocktail crisps? You're raised on them. You get fed them as a baby. I'll bring you a packet over, Phil, when I come out your way.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm about to spend some time in the Far East, so I will bring you all sorts of interestingly flavored potato chips.
Pickled coffee. And squid.
Squid coffee.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Yum, yum. So, guys, any news Magic-related?
It's funny you asked, Sean, because we are less than 24 hours, well, depending on where you are, I suppose, into a world in which there is From the Vault Angels.
From the Vault Angels? Is that Heather Lafferty? I can hear her heart fluttering from all the way from Las Vegas.
Oh, indeed. Indeed. She actually received, you know, when she was on the show, we told her that Wizards was paying attention to her. She didn't believe us until she got that special package from Wizards, which included an oversized Sarah Angel featuring the From the Vault artwork. And I think she actually got a box of From the Vault, and this was last week. And she also got a comic with the Sarah Angel insert. So if Heather is listening, we told you so.
Yeah, well done, Heather. You deserve it. So anyone's been waving the wings/flags for Angels, it's you. By the way, I'm changing my Twitter handle to @AlphaEditionDualLands. Wizards, if you're listening.
Clever. Clever.
Yeah.
For those listeners who are not paying attention to new product releases, it was hard for me to even say that. From the Vault Angels is a collection of 15 cards, and it features, as you may have surmised from the name of the product, cards that are related to angels. And it includes a lot of commander cards, right? I mean, of course it has Sarah Angel because she's iconic for all things angelic in Magic the Gathering, but it also includes Avacyn, Tariel, who had previously only been seen in the original Commander product.
I think he's my favorite Mardu commander as well.
Yeah, she's pretty good. I was about to pick her up, and then they announced this, and I knew I was getting at least one from the Vault Angels, so I stopped. They reprinted Iona, though.
Mm.
Yeah, interesting.
That's two reprints of Iona in 3 months?
Yes, in 3 months.
Thanks.
Baneslayer Angel, Platinum Angel, Lightning Angel, Aurelia, Exalted Angel, Janara, Asura of War. This is my first Janara. And then two beautiful Therese Nielsen pieces for a chroma. Just indescribable. We'll have to include a show note to the announcement. And also Archangel of Strife. These are definitely not modern cards. And with the exception of Janara, I don't think there's one that's under 5 converted mana cost.
Entreat the Angels is the only non-creature in the pack. Is that right?
Yeah,
that's a good card. Still gets played in Vintage. I've seen it in some Commander decks as well.
And Iridescent Angel kind of rounds out the lot, I believe. So Sheldon, is this product one of the inobvious influences of Commander?
Maybe indirectly. I can't imagine a world where they just be randomly printing stuff, but I also don't think that the brand team was thinking we have so many Commander players, we need to pump out more From the Vaults. I think From the Vaults is a nice idea to get some of the older cards into the hands of the newer players, where they don't have to sell a kidney to get them. Yeah, it's an indirect thing. I mean, obviously, when you have something like Tariel that was only printed in the Commander product getting released in the From the Vault set, great. That's a nod to the format and the player base. But for the most part, I don't know if we can put a causal relationship on the From the Vaults thing and the format.
Well, and it looks like I'm just realizing this myself, but Archangel of Strife was also introduced in Commander.
Right.
I think it's interesting that Restoration Angel is not included in this.
I mean, it got printed as a promo too, right?
Yeah, I've got about 3 copies of it, and I think they're all promo foils. got it for pennies.
Yeah, I know. That's how that was the first one I picked up as well, the promo resto.
From my memory of playing since Archangel of Strife came out, I'm pretty sure I don't think anyone has ever chosen peace. You know, everybody chooses war, and creatures just start battling. It's more like Archangel of Bashing than it is.
I've seen peace be chosen once, and that was because somebody was playing with a Doran the Siege Tower deck.
Yeah, okay, sure.
So they were basically choosing war.
Right. Yeah.
They were choosing both.
Yeah, they were.
I hope everybody has an opportunity to pick up a From the Vault Angels, and I would guess that in the short term, at least, the prices on these, the individual prices, if you don't want the whole set, will probably be low enough to pick up a few. But I wouldn't wait very long, in particular, on those Achromas.
Yeah, the Achroma art's beautiful. The Avacyn's always an expensive card, so...
Right.
Yeah, Therese Nielsen is such a spectacular artist, and
yes,
her ability to capture the human form, she would have been one of those people painting pictures of Christ in the 15th century that we would still be remembering today. Just her ability to bring a composition together is amazing to me, and those Achromas are examples of it. Bassandra was another example of that. I wish that card were more playable, because I'd really love to have it in my decks.
I can totally see putting together a kind of Vorthosian deck where there's nothing but Therese Nielsen art and basic lands in it.
You could probably do that.
Has she ever done any basic lands?
I believe she has.
There you go.
I believe. Let's look it up. We have
Nate. We need the looking up stuff song.
Looking up stuff on the internet. Yeah.
Therese Nielsen. Is there a thing on this? Well, there's a thing for this on land. So let's see. She did a forest.
Ooh, one down. Four to go.
She did an island.
Ugh, she still needs to do a plains and a mountain.
She did a mountain, she did a plains, and a swamp.
Yeah!
So you can play Bassandra.
You could play anything with a Therese Nielsen spin.
Her swamp is a guru land.
Oh, I forgot she did Force of Will as well.
Yeah.
Oh, but she did an unhinged forest. That's going to be expensive.
I've got some unhinged land. I probably own some of them.
The mountain is a guru land as well.
Uh-oh. Oh, is the island?
No.
Anyway, question to you eminent people. If you're a Commander player and let's say you're just getting into the format, because I think a lot of us that have been around a while probably own a lot of the cards that are in FDV Angels already, and you're going to buy it whether you like the artwork. If you don't like the artwork, you're not going to. But if you're a new player, is FDV Angels worth it for 14 cards and Iona, which you put in the bin?
What's the MSRP on it?
$50,
yeah.
Probably. Yeah, I mean, that's even at 14 cards, that's $3 and change per card.
Yep, so if you can get an MSRP, I think it's definitely worth it. The Avacyn alone is, if you're buying a single Avacyn, is serious bucks. Getting close to that MSRP on its own.
Especially, yeah. I mean, especially since they're all foil.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I'm sorry. I'm looking now. The MSRP is $34.99.
I'll definitely get it if you can get an MSRP, then. I'll get two or three.
Yeah, the median price for Avacyn alone is $30.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's not foil, right?
And when you sell the Iona on, you can put that money, set it against what you've put out.
Right. Yeah, swing into Target or Walmart or something and see if you can pick one off their toy rack. And if they sell them in Target and Walmart, I don't know. I don't.
No, these are only being sold through certified stores, I believe.
Okay. Oh, yeah, because it's got a distribution thing, right?
Okay, so I think we've said all that needs to be said about Angels for now, unless anyone has a burning thing that I've not covered.
I feel I got lucky. My local game store is selling them for $50, which is still, and another one for $90, but I'm not purchasing from them. And I did find it online for $60 as well. So
the cheapest I've found them in England, £65.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Phil, in fact, I might get you to get me one so and ship it to me, because that would be even cheaper with the shipping.
All right. I'll see if I can pick it up right after we record.
Yeah, of course, Commander. Nice. Commandarin does not support violation of international trade law.
It's a gift.
and violation of customs and whatnot, right?
That is correct. Okay. Of course, we obey all applicable laws. My intent is to gift this to Sean upon his arrival in the United
Absolutely,
States.
Absolutely, and I'll be bringing you a Commander's Arsenal as a gift in return, yeah?
Oh, how wonderful.
You can still get them quite cheap over here. Seems they're out of stock in your side of the world, but over here you can still get them.
Sheldon, we are not easily distracted.
No, not at all.
Okay, so Sheldon, as an avid listener of our podcast, you are undoubtedly aware that we have a segment we like to call The Watch List.
The Watch List.
Whoa. The Watch List. Each time we have this segment, we like to talk about a card that may not necessarily be ban-worthy, but certainly is a card that warps the gameplay and probably warps the meta if it sees popularity in all of the decks a player fields.
Contentious would be the word I'd use to describe the cards.
And the game sort of devolves into who can clone that card, who can steal that card, basically maintain control of that card. And previously we've talked about such luminaries as
Bribery, Doubling Season, Prophet of Krufix, and Consecrated Sphinx.
That's
right. Hey, they're all like blue with the exception of Doubling Season.
And this week, we've picked one that you undoubtedly know all about and have considered. And Sean, do you want to read it? Since you probably play it more than anybody.
Talking amongst Commander players in Britain, and this is the card that gets brought up more than, I think even more than Prophet of Krufix, is ban worthy, or at least worthy of a serious discussion. I'm sure you are bored of hearing about it, Sheldon, but that card is Deadeye Navigator. Deadeye Navigator, for those of you listening that don't know, is a blue card. It's 4 and 2 blue to cast. It is a creature spirit. It is a 5/5. It has Soulbound, so when it enters the battlefield, it pairs with another creature, and then it can repair with anything when it leaves the battlefield and comes back in, including the creature it's soul-bonded with. And it has, as long as Deadeye Navigator is paired with another creature, each of those creatures has pay 1 and a blue, exile this creature, then return it to the battlefield under your control. So it allows you to flicker things at instant speed for 2 mana, including itself.
Well, Sean, what's wrong with that? There's nothing at all wrong with
that. No, that's a pleasant effect. So the way to abuse this card is, normally you see it in things like banned strategies and stuff. So flickering anything that has a very powerful end of the battlefield trigger. So, for example, Eternal Witness. So you have, for 2 mana, return anything from your graveyard to your hand, which can put you into all sorts of hilarious locks. Palancron, that gives you infinite mana if you flicker a Palancron, or any of the Urza's block creatures that untapped stuff when they came back into play. I mean, if I listed everything abusive you could do with Deadeye Navigator, it would be here forever.
Mm. Well, slow down. I'm still writing. I'm taking notes.
Right, okay. Oh, Phil, don't... the other key thing about it, and one of the things that people always bring up when they're complaining, or at least bring up as an issue with this card, is it can flicker itself. So it makes it, as long as you have mana open, essentially immune to instant speed spot removal, which means it can be tricky to play against. Discuss, gentlemen.
Now, Sheldon, we named this segment after a conversation we had previously had, or as a result of a conversation we previously had, where we presumed there was a watch list of cards that were so dangerous that you guys were just constantly watching them and monitoring their interactions with new cards as they were released. Can you shed a little light exactly on why the Rules Committee thinks that Deadeye Navigator is not worth banning? I think you've published an article where you indicate some dissent.
There's some discussion. First of all,
controversy in the Rules Committee.
Once again, I see somebody trying to trick me into saying that there's a watch list.
the segment was named with a sort of ironic slant at those previous conversations.
I'm on to you people. Some people come at it directly, some people come at it obliquely, but there is... there is no such thing as a watch list. We used to have a watch list. It was more trouble than it was worth. It was an administrative overhead, for one, and people just assumed that it was sort of the stepping stone to being banned. If something's going to get banned, you know, if we think that the conditions are right to ban something, we're not going to take the sort of preparatory step of putting it on a watch list first. Internally, there's really no watch list either. There really isn't a watch list. The five of us pay attention to the format at all times. So we're watching, you know, we're watching all the cards all the time. The fact of the matter is, we know that Deadeye Navigator exists. We know that people talk about Deadeye Navigator a lot. We know that people talk about Prophet of Krufix a lot. We know that people talk about Kiki Jiki a lot. You know, we're aware of the conversations that people are having. To go back and answer the question, I might also reject the notion that it over-centralizes games. I don't have a similar experience. It's not Sylvan Primordial. It's not Primeval Titan. I don't see that every game that Deadeye Navigator shows up in. I mean, it's a strong card. I'm not gonna dispute that. And you know, I'll get to the second part of the answer in a second. But I don't see games devolving into just trying to get your own copy of Deadeye Navigator out, which is definitely the case with cards like Prime Time and Sylvan Primordial.
I think that comment was more in a generalized sense and reasons that these cards we discuss are. So I think I agree. Deadeye comes out and puts locks on the table, whereas a card like Prophet of Krufix, say, I think does come under that scrutiny if everyone just tries to get their own profit. And Deadeye has a color requirement in its activation, you see. So,
right. I will agree that Prophet of Krufix is more likely to be a card that everybody wants their own copy of than Deadeye Navigator.
Mm-hmm.
The real answer to the question as to why we don't think it's banworthy is that it's super mana intensive. Sure, it can create, you know, it can create two card combos, but there's no way to take care of every two-card infinite combo in Magic anyway, right?
Correct.
If we did, the banned list would be 1,000 cards long.
Yes.
And
it's the same reason that mass land destruction isn't banned, I'm guessing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's part of it. And part of it is that we want a broad scope of styles to be played. You know, I don't think there's one global commander environment. It's more like housing markets. You know, they're localized. There's not a national housing market. There's a statewide housing market, or there's a citywide housing market. And I think the same is true for Commander. The environment that you might play in locally is different than the environment you're going to play in if you go off to a GP in a different state or a different country. So we do want as broad a possible experience as we can encourage to fit people's playstyles. Back to Deadeye Navigator, it's too mana intensive to really make it ban worthy. It's just, you know, you need to cast it. You need to get the Soul Bond trigger on the stack. It's vulnerable when that happens. And the big thing, unless there's a Draining Whelk or a Mystic Snake underneath it, there are Wrath of God effects, and you know, you're one and done, right?
One second, that's Draining Whelk. Just writing this down, and Mystic Snake. Carry on.
Sure, there can be locks, but that's a super. It's a super mana intensive thing, so it's less worrisome. Low mana, you know, super inexpensive things are more the kind of things that we would be keeping an eye on. You know, if you could do Deadeye Navigator for zero mana, then you know, suddenly things might get kind of crazy.
So all we have to do is figure out how we can lower the cost of activated abilities. Excellent.
Training ground.
And take away the colored component.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, you still need blue on that.
Yeah, you still need blue.
Yeah, so if we generate infinite blue mana.
Sure.
Oh, well, then we don't have to worry about lowering the cost anyway.
Right, if your argument for... if you can generate infinite mana, this thing is broken.
Infinite if you do load mana.
I think you've put the cart in front of the horse.
So, yeah, I 100% agree with you. I mean, there's only one single card in all of Magic that I would hard ban. Those astute listeners might have worked out what card that was from our earlier conversation about From the Vault Angels. And I think that Deadeye is extremely powerful, but reflecting on what Sheldon said, Commander as a format tends to be played in sort of pods and cells. Where you play with a regular group.
Cells.
We're like a terrorist network.
Yes.
Undermining standard Magic's prescience in the community. Anyway, but we play in sort of small groups and small metas. Now, some metas might be like 20 players in a meta, and it might be like my one where we're 5 or 6 regular players and then people sort of visit in or out. But the meta should deal with a card like this. The reason I don't like a card like Iona is that when that got into our meta, basically everybody just scratched a line through monocolored decks and said, well, we can't play these while this is being regularly out. And the people that were using Iona were cheating it into play. It wasn't like they were going, well, you know, it's in the deck, but I need to get to 9 mana before I do it. It was coming in with all sorts of normally green shenanigans to pull it into play really early doors. And it was like, okay, I'm sitting here with my... And this was in the same period that the Commander 14 product was 5 monocolored decks. And you're like, right, so this one card stops me using my new product. It basically, it's worse than being killed early doors, because essentially I can't really leave the table. I'm going to go and... I can't even go make a cup of tea, really. I don't have a solution in my deck, or, you know, maybe I might be able to find... I remember having a Defense of the Heart go off on turn 5 on us, and someone went, Avacyn, Iona, fix the blue. We had 2 people playing mono blue, and it's like, well done, good work.
Yeah, so that's... I mean, that it's going to happen. Sometimes that's going to happen. It's when that is happening all the time is the... that it becomes problematic. A single annoying game state isn't really what the ban list is about, right? It's about sculpting a complete vision, and something corner casey or something that happens once in a blue moon. It's just not, you know, it's not the kind of thing that you write rules for in the first place. Iona's a tricky subject. And it's something that we do, I will say, that we talk about every now and again.
I think a single card that stops, because it, as you say, it is a small groups kind of format. We don't play tournaments generally.
Right.
Some people play in leagues. But it's a card that I find if it gets into your meta, it stops 5 whole deck archetypes of monocolored from being used.
Well, Commander is as close to Richard Garfield's vision of Magic as any format is, because he didn't envision this globality to Magic. He envisioned small groups, and when rare cards came in, they would he believed strongly in metagames, and mm-hmm. Seeing what people were playing and then making you change based on what the other people are playing and adapting, and that I believe that happens in local Commander environments. You have, all right, that jackass Phil is starting to play Iona all the time, so here's what I'm going to do.
Well, you've played against Phil, have you, before? I see.
So you do stuff that that's reactive to that. And it becomes part of the back and forth of really what one of the original visions of Magic was about. But again, Iona is a card that occasionally gets discussed. It certainly is something that I know polarizes people, so we continue to pay attention to the discussion.
How many different cards have been printed in Magic? 20 odd thousand plus?
No, 15 or so thousand.
Yeah, 15, okay, so 15 or so thousand, yeah.
A lot. It's the only card which I sit there and go, I wish that was removed. I wish that was just gone.
Yeah, and And again, there are ways to cheat it into play, but in general, it costs 9 mana, right? So,
I'm not sure that's such a problem in our format.
Yeah, fair. If somebody's hard casting it, again, I hate to sort of be reductio and go back to you know, a wrath of God just takes care of that.
Not if they've set it to white.
Sure.
No, I'm arguing on semantics there, obviously.
Sheldon, when the next time Iona comes up during a rules committee discussion, would you please remember this conversation and then do whatever you can to frustrate Sean?
We should never even consider this card again. It should be reprinted at common in every Commander 14 deck. Hey, it's a black-red Commander deck for a specific product. Hey, it's got an Iona in the box. What? I hate you.
So to sum up our conversation, there's nothing wrong with Deadeye Navigator.
I was about to say, I think with cards like... I was trying to bring it back to that.
It's strong.
Deadeye Navigator is super strong, but I think there's ways of dealing with it, and a meta can react to it.
Deadeye Navigator, like Sean said, is super strong. But we do want there to be strong cards in the format, right? We do want the cards that create tricky and interesting game states. And if we have to deal occasionally with the fact that they once in a while create locks or they create board states we'd rather not have, it happens. You know, there's the real thing. The real thing is if it's happening all the time, then it's a thing. But there's so many different flavors of doing stuff with Deadeye Navigator that I really would like to see. More of a problem, and I think this is one where the discussion has just amplified because people are discussing it. So the amount of discussion is slightly disproportional to the problematics of the card. It's like I said, it's mana intensive, and there's no way to save it natively from a board wipe of any kind, whether it's a disc or an O-Stone or a Wrath of God or a Life's Finale or whatever. There's no way to save it. And if you know the stack well, if you know how to use the stack, that player can't ever tap out because then you're really, really, you know, they're vulnerable. So there are a lot of answers. And I don't believe that run answers noob is a good response to anything. The answers already exist in the format. They're getting played already. I don't really think that Deadeye Navigator is a card that forces adaption. It's a card that might force you to adapt the cards you're already playing to deal with it. But in the big picture sense, we just don't think it's that problematic.
Excellent.
Going back to Iona for a short tangent. Hypothetically, I tried to get us away.
It wasn't me bringing it back.
If Iona was banned, would Painter's Servant become unbanned? Or in other words, how much does Iona affect Painter's Servant's legality?
There are two things that the Rules Committee does not do. The first thing is negotiate with terrorists.
We have to establish we are in cells.
And the second is engage in hypotheticals.
Okie dokie.
I will say that conversation has happened on multiple levels with multiple people. You know, the idea has certainly been floated to us to switch Painter's Servant and Iona on the ban list. And it's an idea that has some merit. But I have to tell you, the real nail in the coffin for Painter's Servant is Ugin. that wasn't just a nail, that was a nail driven in with a 12-pound sledge.
Nice. Painter's Servant has other applications and things you can do with it, whereas Iona is just mean. Whereas Painter's Servant, there are other ways of breaking it, I think, other than her. But Ugin's a good example of it. But...
Yeah, Painter's Servant is a pretty brutal card.
Yeah, I would love to see some of the fun stuff that folks do with Painter's Servant, but I know the nasty stuff that they're going to do far outweighs the cool stuff.
Yeah. All right.
Well, Sheldon, we have a few questions for you, and we're kind of going to pick a main topic, but I think what we'll do is just ask these questions and see what we end up talking about,
sure.
If that's all right with
you.
Yeah,
that's great.
I jokingly said in the beginning of the show that the Rules Committee had secret identities. I haven't seen a recent update. As I think you've published before, like the names of the rules committee, but that was some 4 years ago, I think. Let me ask this aggressively, even though I don't personally agree with it. Do you intentionally hide the names of the rules committee members?
No. As a matter of fact, 4 of the 5 rules committee members are magic luminaries. So it's no secret. It's no secret that I'm on the rules committee. It's no secret that level 5 judge Toby Elliott is on the rules committee. Arguably Toby and I together are the 2 most influential judges in the program's history. So, you know, there's no hiding our identities.
It's worth noting here that you are the only level 5 emeritus, right?
Well, they've done away with the emeritus tag when they created the Magic Judge Hall of Fame, and I was inducted on the first ballot of the Magic Judge Hall of Fame.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Hold on, my cat just interfered.
Yeah, I was going to say that startled somebody.
he was shocked. He ran away immediately.
Yeah,
congratulations on the induction.
Thank you. Appreciate it. I mentioned Gavin Duggan before. Gavin is the person who suggested back in 2006-ish, when he was then a level 3 judge, that we formalize the rules committee. We did it with another Canadian level 3, Duncan McGregor, who stepped down a year or so later. But Gavin has been an online net rep. Gavin was a regional coordinator in Kavanaugh before he moved to California. And as a matter of fact, he's now... strangely enough, kind of neighbors with Toby. In addition to being Toby's cousin, which we didn't know until much later, they were like, showed up at a wedding together or something. Like, are we related? And then of course, they
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So, yeah, they actually get to hang around a lot together now because they both live in the Bay Area. And then... Wizards of the Coast's manager of organized play, Scott Larrabee, or organized play systems, I think I got the title right. Scott Larrabee is the 4th member of the rules committee. And again, no secret that Scott doesn't vocally post about the format a lot, but he didn't really vocally post about much of anything. Most of his work is internal. But again, through my posts and certainly through my social media, since Scott is such a close friend and visits here so often, like we were talking about pre-show, there's no secret identity there either. I think the only rules committee member that most folks don't know about is Alex Kenny. Alex came on back in the day after Duncan stepped down. Gavin said, and this was still when we were very, very small as a format, and Gavin said, well, you know, one of my local guys, Alex, has been doing this and that and the other. And even though he wasn't a well-known name in Magic, he's become a very, very lucid voice for a lot of things in the format. So while you might not know Alex's name, he definitely has had historically a great deal of impact on the format. Those are the 5 members. We had 6 up until recently. Devin Rule, who was somebody we added to the committee a few years ago, 4 or 5, maybe. I have to look at my calendar. Devin was a community member who we noticed on the official forums and a couple of the other Magic-related websites posting, and he was always smart, made a great argument, even when he disagreed with what we had to say and what we did. He did so. He understood how to do so in a constructive manner. So he lived in Portland at the time, and we were going to Seattle for a pro tour. So maybe it wasn't 4 or 5. Maybe it was 3 years ago or so. It was a pro tour or a world championships or something. It's the one Chapin got inducted to the Hall of Fame. That's the one. That's where what I remember. And we had him, since he lives so close, we had him drive up, and we sat together and interviewed him. And it's like, this is a guy we need to add to the rules committee. Shortly thereafter, maybe a year after or so, he got a very good job offer in the gaming industry, and recently told us, look, guys, you know, my job is just taking too much of my time, and I prefer the opportunity to step back and You know, when if things change, maybe I'll hit you back up again. But, you know, he had that. Well, and one of the reasons we put him on the committee was, you know, he had that work ethic and that internal sense of integrity to know when he couldn't dispatch his responsibilities to proactively say, I'm going to have to step aside. So there are five of us right now. It's a great committee because we know each other. We trust each other. There's no gamesmanship amongst the committee. So we can trust that when we talk about things, we're getting an honest opinion. There are no sort of external agendas. And, you know, we're all operating in the same direction for the health of the format.
So that anecdote about Devin and how that is his name, right? I got
Devin.
That correct. Devin.
Yeah, Devin Rule.
That anecdote about Devin, is that how a person aspiring to become a member of the Rules Committee would attract your attention? What are the ways in which our community members, since they've asked, could become members of the Rules Committee?
Yeah, that's exactly the way that we would add somebody to the Rules Committee. They would make themselves the person that we would go, why isn't he on the Rules Committee? Mm-hmm. Right? So they would have to have a significant presence online. They would have to be a strong evangel for the format. They would have to know how to make an argument. They would have to know how to disagree to an argument. They would have to know how to speak correctly to a group of people. Then they would also have to know how to shut up when it was time to shut up, which one or two of us, meaning mostly me, doesn't know how to do. So be a great, you know, be a great example of a person that we would want to put on the committee. Make yourself, again, make, if you aspire to be on the Rules Committee, make yourself into the person where we just one day realize that the committee is worse because you're not on it.
Have you ever considered having a like a subcommittee or a group of trusted community people who maybe you might use them as a test audience, like film studios use, so people can bounce ideas off of?
Well, I mean, we have those people, right? We have the community. We have friends. We have our local groups. You know, Scott is in the building, and there's a Friday afternoon Commander League at Wizards of the Coast, and which commonly gets, from what I understand, you know, double-digit participation. So there are people everywhere to talk to already, and I don't think it's necessary to create another administrative level of anything. Mm-hmm. We talk to people we trust all the time. I mean, there are some of my regular guys, mostly at Armada Games, which is my local game store, that I'll take aside and say, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And of course, you know, people are free to give us their opinions whenever they want. You know, every week, every Thursday, you can walk into the game store and scream obscenities at me if you want to about why Iona isn't banned yet.
How frequently does that happen?
Well,
I've never met Sheldon face to face, so I've only shouted him about only once.
But that's not the way to get on the Rules Committee.
That's not the way to get on the Rules Committee. The answer to the question, how often does that happen? It happens online every now and again. But if you've met me in person, you'd realize that that's not going to happen in person.
Yeah, I mean, in my line of work, I'm a mental health nurse. If someone comes and just shouts at me, they're not going to get what they want. Or they're not even going to get a reasonable conversation about what they want.
A person who walks up to me unprompted and starts shouting at me is in some significant physical danger.
Oh my god, you're going to whip a deck out and say, we'll settle this the man's way, get your commander out.
He's going to hit him with a with a deck.
Who needs a deck?
He's just going to pelt him.
Who needs a deck when you've got fists? That's
right, he is ex-military.
Oh, are you? I didn't know that. Oh, I did know that, actually. I listened to on another podcast, which...
I can honestly say I've never killed anybody that didn't have it coming.
So, segueing, very sort of touching upon what I was actually going to bring up next, the reason I brought that up was, I think, and I'm playing devil's advocate here, I'd like to stress that, one of the criticisms when the Tuck debate, or the Tuck rule was changed back in March, from which provoked a very vehement reaction from the community that I witnessed.
That's underselling it a little bit. Okay.
Yeah, I'm using some English politeness here, because I am playing devil's advocate in this argument, and in a bit I'll reveal what my opinion on the Tucker rule was, but you might traffic that it wasn't what I'm about to say. So some people felt very aggrieved by it, and one of the accusations put out was that the rules committee make these decisions sort of arbitrarily, which you impassionedly said isn't true, and I've no reason not to believe you, and evidence suggests it. But then people said, well, if the argument is they discussed it amongst their play groups, that's fine if there are 5 play groups in the world, or 6 play groups back then, that are having a direct input on our format, but how can we do it? You know, this is unfair. I'm playing in a group in, where I am, Manchester, England. How can I influence this? This doesn't seem good. So, which is why I brought up the concept of maybe a sort of a test audience thing, where people using forums, etc., you could bounce ideas off and to gauge reaction.
Well, again, the ideas come to us. We don't have to solicit them. You know, when the Tuck debate came up, and this debate has been going on for 5 years or so before there was a ruling. You know, it got accelerated with a couple of commanders and whatnot. The ideas are already out there. We don't really need to solicit them in order to get good feedback. There's a lot of bad feedback too, right? You know, there's a lot of flaming about things and whatnot.
Oh yeah, we're in the public forum. It's going to happen,
right? But in the whole, you know, in the whole scheme of things, we get great feedback, because we're not just paying attention to our local playgroups. We're paying attention to the things that people write about Magic, both in articles and on podcasts and in forums all over the place. You know, Alex and Toby and I especially spend a lot of time on the official forums and on a couple of other websites, just listening to what people say. Even if we're not necessarily actively participating in any in particular discussions, we're listening to what people are saying. Like I said earlier, I don't think it's necessary to create another administrative level, like the RC advisory committee or something like that, in order to get the kind of feedback, the kind of directed feedback that we'd like to have. Mm-hmm. And one of the real things about this is committees can get too large. Committees can get too large to make good decisions.
Yeah.
When they're over a certain number of people, and honestly, to me, 5 is a perfect number. 6 is fine. 7 is doable. After that, I think you start to lose the thread and get compromised decisions as opposed to strong decisions. A group of 5 can operate independently with the similar vision. The 5 of us don't necessarily have an identical vision for the format, but it's close enough to identical to get us moving forward in a positive direction.
I think a popular old saying, certainly in England, to reflect that is a camel is just a horse designed by committee. So, you know, it has its own purpose, but it wasn't the intended purpose.
Right. So there's enough. I think there's enough information available to us, and there are enough people. And, you know, again, I have a bully pulpit from which to talk about the format that, you know, every week on Star City Games, so I can solicit information, you know, feedback if we need it or we want it, or I can randomly go off and do kind of my own things. Generally, if I'm going to do a test that I'm going to talk about in public, it's always I talk to the other guys first. It's like, okay, thinking about doing this, what are the landmines that I need to avoid, and you know, is there a direction you want me to point it in? I very publicly did a Kokusho test some years ago when it was still on the banned list, and everybody's like, yeah, whatever. And you know, it was sort of the realization that Kokusho was met with collective shrugs when it got played. whereas even 5 years earlier, it would have been, you know, a 10-alarm fire.
Yeah.
You know, everybody would have been, oh my god, the world is crumbling because Kakushu's here. And now it's like, yeah, it's strong, okay, you're going to gain some life, you might recur it once or twice, but graveyard hate is better, for one.
Yeah.
Way, way better. And it's just, yeah, it's like, there are better creatures than Kakushu now.
I think in an environment where Grey Merchant of Asphodel is printed at common, Kokusho is probably let off the leash a bit, isn't he?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes we very quietly do some things. I know there are people that, and I've talked about this before, and I think, Phil, we even talked about it a little bit last time we talked, that people want these scientific tests.
That's
and
impossible.
It can't happen. We don't have the data collection ability to do anything scientific. We're not analyzing play of millions of online games, and we're, you know, to collect the data of the in real life games would be practically impossible without a giant budget, you know, reaching into 7 or 8 figures American, and you know, a team of 50 or 60 people. And to what end? You know, let's assume I had $5 million I wanted to throw at collecting data for Commander. What would be the upshot at the end of such a data gathering and analysis effort? If we banned one card and took one off the ban list, I think there are better uses for, you know, for our resources, not just the money, but the time, than that.
I think you'd probably get buyer's remorse, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, quite a bit of buyer's remorse. So you know, when people are like, oh, are you scientifically? No, this isn't science. Well, for one, it's not science. This is art.
Card game.
It's a card game, but. Commander is an art. Commander is not mathematics. It's a sculpture. And we have a vision of how we want the sculpture to look. So we're constantly reshaping the clay as we go along. And it's very much, here is what we want to do. You know, it's like making a movie. There are a number of ways that you can tell this very story. And this is the way we're going to tell it. And if, you know, if you like the story a different way, then make your own movie. And we're, you know, and we're happy with, you know, we're happy with you making your own movie. But this is the way we're doing it. And this is the way we really hope that you enjoy it. We'd like you to come along with us. But we understand that, like with all art, it doesn't resonate. You know, each art form doesn't resonate with everybody.
So Tiny Leaders is another movie.
Yeah, I would say that Tiny Leaders is a crappy movie, but yeah, sure.
Tiny Leaders is the movie for people that couldn't afford a ticket to go see Vintage in IMAX, so they went to see the Adam Sandler film in Screen 8. But I have played Tiny Leaders.
It does not resonate with Sheldon.
it's alt vintage, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
It's got its place. So we've touched on a few bits, but I particularly wanted to... it's been nearly 6 months since the Tuck Rule change, and...
you mean since the Tuck Rule change ruined Commander?
Destroyed the format, I had to sell my collection, I'd never even play anymore. I had to start this podcast just so I could tell Sheldon off about the Tuck Rule.
Yeah, you forgot to scream obscenities at me.
Sorry. What's an American obscenity? Bleep, bleep, bleep.
Oh, no, we've already edited that from the podcast. Yeah.
Bleep, 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 bleep. So any reflections from any of us, because we all play Commander, about how, if at all, the Tuck Rule change has affected our play groups? Positive, negative, meh?
Meh. I don't see much Condemn or Ablation being played anymore. Jaleva still finds Spin into Myth handy, but that's about it.
Absolutely no change in my local environment. People still play the cards. People still occasionally, you know, oblate a commander just to, you know, to get it off the field or use. The week of the spell crumple, the week of the change in the tuck rule, I played a spell crumple to great effect in a game, and I'm like, yeah, there's no need to take these cards out because they still do what they do. It's just that they might not do it to a subset of the cards that get played. I suppose in a highly competitive format, the local environment, it might have had some effect, but really, there's been this sort of collective ennui about the change that had me thinking, could have made this a lot earlier, and it wouldn't have been a big deal.
So, yeah, the consensus, listener Pete, who is a dear friend of mine, when it all happened, his one comment about it was, I don't understand why this wasn't just a thing from the beginning. Like, it seems so logical that if you're building a format around and creating a whole new zone and a concept around this sort of commander card that color idents your entire deck, that giving access to that card most of the time, you know, there's a couple of exceptions like Ixodron and things, but giving access to that card most of the time seems to be something that you should want to strive to have in your format.
Right, and if if I spell crumple your commander and you put it back in the command zone, guess what? You still have to pay two more when you cast it next time.
Oh yeah, unless it's Carador, but yes, or Derevi. But so how it's made a difference in my decks. In my green decks, which admittedly of the 15 decks I own, only four of them run green, but I use a lot less creature tutor in those decks now because they were decks that like Garve and Jared, Golgari Lich Lord, sorry, Golgari Lich Lord, but we'll come to that another day, Phil, after a hilarious typo one day.
That was a great typo. Oh, Sheldon, what's your Scottish accent like?
Probably something like you'd hear from train spotting or one of those.
The Edinburgh inflection, I see.
Yeah. But, I mean, I did recently watch all of. Oh, damn! I don't even know what the hell is the show where the woman gets sent back into the 15th century. It's set in World War II, and it's based off a book. I'm completely...
Is
that a Connie Willis?
Right.
I don't know. Jeez, oh whiz. I'm drawing a complete blank on...
I've not heard of this at all, so you could be talking about a religious text for all I know.
No, it has in it the Pirates of the Caribbean guy, the guy that played the captain, not Captain Jack Sparrow, but the
Jeffrey
British
Rush.
Navy... Bill
Nye?
No, he means the small
Jack
guy.
Davenport. Jack Davenport.
Yeah, whose name's actors have really annoyed me. I've forgotten his name. He's in lots of English TV and is always very good.
Yeah.
He played in the political comedy The Thick of It, Prepare for a Bleep. He played a character whose name was Boop. There you go, Nate. I'll let you put a bleep in there. But yeah, he's... that's annoying, I can't remember his name. We're getting very sidetracked off of what we're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, sorry.
So, yeah, so it may allow me to remove an amount of creature tutor out of my decks. And secondly, it allowed me to build more confidently into decks that rely on their commander more. And it felt more like I was embracing an aspect of our format which... I hadn't felt super comfortable in doing it. So decks that really key off their commander, I could now embrace. And that felt nice to do.
Had it been your experience that you were just getting your commander tucked so often that you didn't want to rely on them?
Certain decks. There were certain decks like... Jared's a very good example. So Jared is a deck which... It's a combo deck, which I know you're not a massive fan of, Sheldon, from reading your articles, but it tries to, you know, do the... mill myself, mill everyone, Lord of Extinction, blow up Jared, kill.
Sure.
That way. So as soon as I was playing with that deck, I had to never use my commander until I had the 11 mana out to play, 12 mana, sorry, play Jared, play the Lord of Extinction, activate Jared, all in the same turn. Which basically meant my commander was doing nothing for the game. Whereas now I can bring him out sooner, use him even as a threaten with commander damage, because he gets the +1/+1. So there were, and Garve's another good example. That deck, well, it's another green black deck. It's got white in there as well, isn't it? But it's a deck that if that commander goes, that deck really gets hindered quite a lot. So I had the deck built, but I was really reticent to use it, and then recently I've really embraced those decks and gone, let's go. So instead, I was building stuff like Send Triplets, which is just an Esper good stuff deck, which happens to have a commander which is powerful, but if she goes, I don't really care that much. Like, if she got tucked back in the day, all right, I'd dig her out with a tutor if I really want to, but the deck doesn't need her to power through. I suppose the counter-argument to that is a deck like Purphoros becomes very powerful, but it's not crept into my meta, so...
Yeah, well, I mean, you mentioned Caridor earlier, and getting Caridor tough was suboptimal, but also, you know, Caridor has the vulnerability that if you get your graveyard removed, it's also pretty terrible. So
yeah,
it's just part of the the response of playing in an environment that you got to make your Caridor deck function really well when you have him in play, but be able to still function when you don't have your graveyard available. So
Jared suffers the same problem as that. So.
Yeah,
if Jared's graveyard goes, we'd die. Carry on, sir.
As an aside, Sheldon, you view the graveyard as valid a zone from which cards could be played as any other, right?
Of course.
So, do you look down on people who eliminate graveyards? Maybe build entire decks in which the graveyard is vaporized as cards are put into it.
I try not to.
And
look,
as an aside to the aside,
yes.
How do you feel about Marieki Ribery? Go.
I feel as though other people should not play graveyard removal cards, but that I should because I'm the one who will use them responsibly.
But you can't always be everywhere. Ribery. You can't be everywhere at the same time.
Right.
So you need to delegate deputies to carry out.
The graveyard is a valid zone. The graveyard is a valid zone, and I believe that you cannot complain too much if graveyards get removed, because using them is very, very strong. So if someone ley lines the void out of the gate, then you've got to be able to deal with it. I hate the idea that my graveyard is going to get nuked, but I understand that it's gonna. Like we were talking about earlier in Kokusho, graveyard hate is so much stronger today than it was back in the day, and that's probably healthy for the format.
Excellent.
A regular matchup in our little testing international group that we do over the interwebs is Marieki on one side, Lazav, Demir, Mastermind on the other, and Phil sitting in the middle going, wow, my face. And when that matchup happens, my graveyard gets nuked, so I just have to mill the hell out of Marieki and get him off the table that way. And Phil often wins because me and Nate take each other out.
It's an interesting deck building thing when you're playing a black deck. Do you put, you know, knowing other people can abuse their graveyard, knowing that you want to use them a little bit, but you mostly want to use your own, do you put Agent of Erebos into your deck? Because the thing is that somebody else playing black can reanimate it out of your graveyard and hurt you, or somebody else can clone it and hurt you. So it's, you know, a card choice like that is really walking the line when you're playing a graveyard deck.
Is Sepulchral Primordial. Do you put that in your deck?
Yeah.
Because if that goes into your own graveyard and someone clones, steals, it hurts so bad.
we've had some crazy. It's multiple black players, multiple black primordials, multiple Palpiteer clicks at the same time, and yeah, it just gets all insane. As you know, All right, I'll reanimate, or I'll cast Black Primordial. I'll get your Black Primordial and your Restoration Angel. And, you know, and suddenly it's Rise of the Dark Realms for one card.
Yeah, Sepulchral Primordial is the keystone of lots of very essence of commander hilariousness in my...
Yeah, right.
I would posit that the only real way to abuse a graveyard is to exile all cards from it.
That is a fair supposition.
Well, get ready for some abuse.
The TV show that I was talking about is called Outlander.
Oh, there's my father-in-law, who is an English professor, has just finished reading that. I'll ask him.
It's not Jack Davenport that I was thinking of. It's Tobias Menzies. He was in he played Mark Anthony in Rome that I was thinking of. But a fine show.
Oh, very good. We'll include a link to the show description in the show notes at the end.
It probably covers the talk debate, I think. We all generally felt it's...
Yeah, to wrap that up, it has seemed that once again the doomsayers were hyperbolic, and I've seen and certainly heard very little negative impact to the format since the Tuck rule change.
A very quick question. Is there anything you would change, Sheldon? As the person that presented the change, is there anything you would change about how you did that? Because I think one of the criticisms that got directed at yourself was about that specifically.
Yeah, maybe a little more clarity in how we came about the change. There was one paragraph that I think needed a little more, a little better editing. Although, you know, we never make a decision, you know, we never post anything about the format in general without everybody's eyes passing over it.
Was that the paragraph about the feel bads by any chance?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just a crisper, more concise explanation of the ruling. I try not to, you know, you don't want those to go too far. And one of the things is, the more you explain about something, people talk about transparency all the time. They're like, oh, we want transparent look into the more you explain, the more problems you create. The more you explain, I mean, I believe in not having a secret cabal about anything, but the more words you use to explain things, the more opportunity people have to pick apart what you say. And
yes,
it's a real skill to know how much to say. Like, you know, remember I said earlier about knowing when to shut up? Sometimes when you make a posting about these things, you follow the ABC rule: accurate, brief, and clear. And just too much explanation is just opening yourself up to having to explain more about the explanation. And it's, you know, it becomes a, you know, it takes on a life of its own, and it becomes its own thing. So yeah, I think we could have done that a little better. But certainly don't regret how we did it, and don't regret making the change in general.
Excellent.
Yeah, that is excellent. So do you at this point disavow knowledge of a Sheldon Menery army that may or may not be representing you in graveyard hate all across the globe? Not that I'm obsessing over this. Not that Nate's Mariachi Ribéry deck has scarred me in any way.
Does that make Nate the Sabo Tavok to Sheldon's Krovax Ascendant Evokar?
I have completely lost this thread.
So we have a bunch of questions. We're just going to walk through them now. One of the questions, one of our listeners, Brad Fairbanks, who is at PDX Gamer, asked, and Brad, by the way, went kind of nuts in a very good way and asked us over a dozen questions. He asks one about an interesting one about compensation. He says, do you feel that Wizards has compensated you adequately for your role in promoting the format? That's a very interesting question.
It is a very interesting question, and I think that's between me and Wizards of the Coast.
Well, it's a concise answer, and probably expected. Trade secrets, guys. Trade secrets.
Yeah, I mean, could they lavish me with some trips and meals and vacations and six-figure checks annually, yes. If they wanted to do that, I would let them.
All right. So the Devoid ability and Commander, to be clear, we expect to be sort of stiff-armed. Will there be a ruling change that comes out as a result of the Devoid ability?
Well, I'm going to confound your expectations and say no. It's already been discussed. There's no need to... There's no need to make any changes.
Right.
Color identity is color identity, and abilities that change the color of something are additive. So all the factors that go into color identity are additive. Mana cost in the upper right-hand corner,
yes.
mana symbols in the text box, and any color-setting abilities on the card. So they're additive, never subtractive. So this is colorless, doesn't take away anything, but... For example, this is red, does add something.
Yes, that makes
so,
sense.
Yeah, so the, yeah, there's, yeah, we already, if you follow me on Twitter, you saw last week, maybe this past week, a brief discussion between me, Toby, and Matt Tabak about it, because somebody had asked the question when it first got spoiled, and there's no need to change anything.
Right.
For those of you who don't know, Matt Tabak is the Magic Rules Manager, so he's the guy that would change anything. He even said no need for a change.
Excellent.
We have a lot of listener questions. Should we rattle through some of these?
Nate, would you read this first one?
I'll ask my question first.
Sure.
Who is your favorite commander right now?
Oh.
Yasova Dragonclaw.
All right.
I built that recently, and it's, you know, what, 3-4 months ago now, or whenever it came out. I built it, and it's basically Yasova Threatens, or the Threat of Yasova, I think I called it. And it borrows creatures, bashes people in the face. We have a local, you know, one of our local rules is, and you know, I use the air quotes around rules there. One of our local rules is when you steal something from somebody, you have to bash them in the face with it. So it's usually borrow things and then send them back. Now. With Yasova, sometimes it's, can I borrow that so I can bash the other guy? And they're like, yeah, sure.
And then you sacrifice it.
Well, yes. Then there's things, great cards like Shivan Harvest. There's the obvious ones like Greater Good, right? But then there are non-obvious ones like Shivan Harvest and Perilous Forays, which get you land or blow up problematic non-basic lands.
Yeah, great cards. Yeah. Both great cards.
So yeah, I really enjoy playing that. And Willbreaker has certainly been a great addition to that deck, because when Yasova triggers at the beginning of combat, you target something, and even if you don't pay for it, you're going to get it because of Willbreaker, and it's not going to have haste, but you're going to get it permanently.
Very nice.
Yes, that's excellent.
Next question.
Richie Tiongson at Warlan asks, just yes or no, no details. Did Wizards consult you for something special for Commander 2015?
No comment is an acceptable answer.
I'm trying to remember. I don't remember. How's that?
Very good. Then these experience counters or the experience mechanic, they did not That might have been one of those things that they would have consulted you on, I think, is what Richie is getting at.
And that's what we would guess Richie is getting at. He's not like messaged us and said, well, I'm secretly asking about this.
Yeah, no. They occasionally consult with us on stuff. And in general, I'd rather not say specifically which things they have and which things they haven't.
Absolutely, right. No, I'm looking forward to seeing how that works out. There are so many ways it can go, and I'm excited to see it.
And even though I'm not an active level 5 judge anymore, I don't want to ever comment on something that's not been officially spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
Back when I was doing that, that was a hard rule that I had for myself, even if the company didn't have it. And even now, I think it's appropriate that somebody say, what do you think of card? I'm like, is it officially spoiled? Before I say anything about it.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's with great power, as it were, comes great responsibility. And anybody who can see the cards or gets information ahead of time really has a responsibility not to spoil it.
Yeah.
So at Real Ray Bramble whose name, as you may have guessed by now, is Ray Bramble.
Is he the real Ray Bramble?
I suspect he might be.
None of these.
But it's really difficult to tell on the interwebs. Yeah. How's the current health of the format? Do you think the Wizards branding has helped, or are they overpowering the format with some of the cards they are printing?
I think the health of the format is extremely strong right now. And I love the fact that they're making the effort. And again, Phil, I think we've mentioned this on a previous podcast. Game designers and the guys in R&D have to push the envelope.
Yes.
In order to bring us some of the awesome things they do, cards that really resonate, cards that we really love for the format, they have to push the envelope. Sometimes when you push the envelope gets broken. And cards like Grizzlebrand get made. and to me, occasionally breaking something or making something broken is an appropriate price to pay to get the cool stuff that we get. So to directly answer the question, yes, I love the fact that they're doing stuff for us and making an effort, and I don't think that they've overpowered the format at all.
Excellent.
So, next question comes from friend of the show, Nick Jaragoski, and it's his regular question. Stuck on a plane, which planeswalker do you ask to get you home?
Jace, I suppose, because he's the smartest.
He's gone for Jace. You're the first person to pick Jace, so he's all yours.
Which Jace incarnation would you choose?
The expensive one.
The Mind Sculptor.
The Mind Sculptor one. Yeah, sure. Because he can brainstorm.
Yes, he can.
Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. Okay, we only have a few minutes left, Sheldon, so maybe we'll ask a few rapid-fire questions since Brad put a great deal of effort into this. So above all, and Brad is at @PDX_gamer, and he says, above all, my eternal gratitude for pioneering the format. As standard left me hollow, EDH has saved my love of Magic the Gathering.
Every obscenity that gets shouted at me is worth it because of one post like that.
Oh
yeah, that's awesome. Okay, rapid fire begins.
I'm ready.
In a Star Wars theme deck, what legendary creature would be Han?
Captain Sisse.
Sorry, I broke. Should Wizards take a more active role in the ban list now that sanctioned events with prize support are common?
Wizards already has an active role in the format.
What with, and you mean by Scott Larrabee's participation? Yeah, of course.
By discussing things with us.
Yeah.
They do.
The people, I'm going to get off the rapid fire here for a second. People sure. Who say Wizards should have more control of the format don't understand the relationship between the Rules Committee and Wizards of the Coast. We have, again, like we described earlier, we have four of the five of us are high visibility magic people that already communicate with Wizards of the Coast a great deal. So, I hate to use the word insiders, but we're pretty much insiders. So the question of whether they have influence, I mean, we listen to people in the building all the time. You know, so that influence in the positive sense, not the with the negative connotation influence. In the positive sense, that influence is already there, and they've specifically said they have no interest in taking over the format.
Well, that's good.
Next question,
Merlin at Dirk.
Boop.
How about just let's say from Merlin.
Do we need to bleep that name?
Yeah, from Merlin. Just a general thought after the Command Cast gathering, Commander Con,
Scott Larrabee. Toby Elliott and I have already begun discussions about CommanderCon.
Excellent.
Well, I hope there's a place for podcast people there.
Those of you who follow me on social media may know that recently bought a new house, the second floor of which is going to be a dedicated gaming space, and it's about 800 square feet.
Oh my God.
Well,
so that's 100 square meters, and it's nearly 100 square meters for you European types.
The Queen doesn't even have that.
She probably does.
Yeah, her commander space is a little smaller.
She's the commander. Every commander in every deck of hers, just a picture of her. I win.
Yes, so I'm actually trying to figure out if we could manage the first Commander Con, after we get the house built, if we could manage the first Commander Con there. But yeah, Scott, in truth, Scott and Toby both were visiting here back in March, and we had already talked about the idea, and Scott and I had talked about the idea maybe even a year earlier. Now it's just the logistics of putting together. It would probably be a reasonably small invitation list the first time. You know, like those board game convention groups that you know, grow over time? That would be the sort of model we'd work on.
Right. My advice to you is to plan for over 100 people. Florida is pretty accessible. Folks would fly into probably sure. Orlando and then just drive down.
That's super easy for
me
to get to.
And right. And the commander cast, the command zone gathering had over 100 people show up. So I think you'll need a little bit larger room.
Right. So I should
that
be
was
expecting
a GP Vegas though, wasn't it?
So I should be expecting my royalty check from that anytime, right?
I'm pretty sure Josh and Jimmy lost money on that.
Yeah, our new house is actually going to be almost equidistant, like within a minute or two from the Tampa and the Orlando airports. That's one of the reasons we moved there, was to put Orlando in play. And yeah, I know there are a lot of direct flights in Orlando, obviously, because of Disney.
Yeah.
Next question.
Dinesh Sarandon, do you get tired of people asking for certain cards to be banned rather than just playing more answers? For example, Iona.
Tired. when you put yourself as the public face of a thing, you have to be emotionally aware of the bad that comes with the good. So I don't really hold it against anybody. Everybody has their own vision of how they want things to be, so they're going to ask. So I don't really get tired of it. I would rather answer like questions that haven't been asked before, but sure.
What is the most underused card or mechanic in EDH?
The most underused? Wow. It's not really a rapid-fire question answer. Most underused? Fog.
Good mechanic.
I'm telling you, two things. Two big things, two messages that I want to give the commander players. One, stay in school, and two, play your fog effects. You know, in the post Craterhoof Behemoth world, you need fog.
Yeah,
and it can be awesome ones like Tangle that you know make them not untap, or Spore Cloud, which make them not untap and can do other crazy stuff. Whatever, Aetherize, but play your fog effects.
Fog's not drugs? No, it's a half rhyme.
Yeah. Yeah. I just watched for a graduate class that I'm taking in starting Monday, as a matter of fact, called Film and Masculinity. I just watched A Clockwork Orange. Maybe fog's not droogs.
For what it's worth, I just picked up a Spike Weaver a couple of days ago.
Perfect.
And I plan to use
great
it.
Great card.
Mm-hmm. All right. Sean, you have a next question, right?
I do. This was a question I wanted to ask personally. So, Nate, you ask it because it's a bit vain for me to ask it, I guess.
How do you feel community-led content, like podcasting, has affected the community? I know it directly contributed to Sean's evangelizing the format. Also, do the Rules Committee listen to any podcasts?
Ooh.
I can't say what other podcasts the other guys listen to. I'll have to tell you, occasionally is my answer. I listen to some of the podcasts, mostly because of a time thing. As a student, putting a podcast on in the background while I'm studying or writing or working breaks my concentration. So I don't really... I listen to a lot less music, and I listen to a lot less online content now that's 2 years now that I've been a college student. The answer to the first part of the question is, for the most part, only good. I don't actually have any specific examples of the not good, although I imagine there's been something. But for the most part, yeah, it's great because you get people excited about a thing that you're excited about. And if you care enough to do a podcast or to do some sort of community content or something like that, like Tom Delia's MTG Radio, then yeah, it's only great for the community.
Excellent.
Okay.
We actively support other people starting podcasts and stuff as well.
Yeah. So probably our last question, and I'm sorry we didn't get to all of them. Do you predict the recent Mulligan/Scry rule that was tested at the Pro Tour will propagate to EDH?
The fact that there's a change to the to the Mulligan rule gives us a convenient opportunity to talk about ours.
Yeah.
It will not propagate. It will not likely propagate in an identical form.
So we've been testing it out in our playgroup a lot since the it was announced that it was going to be at the Pro Tour, and I can report it's been great. Really nice. It helps people smooth out the draws. There's a lot less feel-bads about poor starts and stuff. That one extra scry, it's been really good.
Yeah, the short answer is that we're talking about it.
All right, excellent. Well, Sheldon, thank you very much for coming on the show. We've actually been looking forward to this for a long time. Since we started the podcast, we've wanted to have you
on.
Thanks for taking the time this morning.
It's been my distinct pleasure, as always. I know you're always a lot of fun to talk to. So anytime you want to give me a call back, I'll be happy to come on and spend another hour and a half or whatever we've spent talking about the finest of all the formats.
Sheldon, it's been a genuine pleasure. I 100% mean that.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you very much. Is this the point? Is this the point where I go? If you want to follow me on social media, do it.
So, Sheldon, if somebody wants to follow you on social media, how would they do that?
They would go to Facebook and find me at my name. They would go to Twitter and find me at my name. Of course, you can find me. You can find me every Thursday on Star City Games, and I also do a food and wine blog that is called discoveriesinfoodandwine.com, although I have to be honest, I haven't done much recently.
All right. Excellent. And we'll include links to all of those sources in our show notes, Sheldon.
Super.
Next time we have you on, I would really, it's a passion of mine. I would really love to talk about the importance of leagues in Commander.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts on that, obviously, and it'd be a great discussion. So we'll do it next time.
Excellent. All right. So for our listeners, of course, we love to hear from you, and we've been getting a lot of great messages after running our first ever contest. So please take the time to contact us either in email, on Twitter, and of course, this is where Phil begs for things, but please give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. That makes us both feel better, and we can point to it and say, hey, look at that, to the people who actually care about the number of reviews and listeners we have. Our theme song was created for the podcast by Mr. Nate Burgess. Our logo was created for the podcast by Mr. Picto with assistance from Kelly DeLuca. You can find more art from Mr. Picto by going to mrpicto.co.uk. That, of course, will be in our show notes. Special thanks to our tech whizzes, Jesse Thompson and Graham Frank. You can reach us by going to our website at commanderinmtg.com. Our email is cast@commanderinmtg. On YouTube, you can find us by searching for Commander and MTG Podcasts, and special thanks to Nate, who puts all of that together on YouTube. We're even on Reddit now as user Commander and MTG. We post in the EDH subreddit on Facebook. We're Commander and MTG Podcast, and on Twitter, we are at Commander and MTG. And individually, on Twitter, I'm at Ketjack.
I am at Copain26.
And I'm at Mr. Plorg.
Excellent. All right. Well, that's our show. Thanks for listening. And thanks again, Sheldon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm going to go make some fresh pasta for tonight.
Very nice.
Lovely. Yeah, we were pun-free this episode. Man, Sheldon, you took a long time with us this morning. I'm simultaneously very grateful and very sorry. I don't know how to describe
it. Yeah, my distinct pleasure. I generally, you know, even when somebody says it's an hour-long podcast, I generally budget 2 hours anyway. So
yeah.
When we've had guests before, we've tend to have gone long just because people like to listen to you guys. So, and I think people will definitely want to listen to yourself.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's Sheldon. Having you on is absolutely amazing. So we will invite you back if you don't mind us.
I would.
If you're not turned off by Sean's affected British accent.
It's not affected. Sorry. I'll do my normal accent. Yeehaw! On the corral, ranching some steers.
Yeah, I almost, you know, when you asked me about the Scottish accent, I almost went to the Robert Carlyle from Trainspotting, but I think he said the word
bleep
too many times for a family show. Yeah. Get moving!
under it.